This is Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hicks, Browns are going to win.
Mayfield, end zone, Landry, touchdown.
With Dan Kadar and Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. With Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository.
It's intercepted. Picked off by Denzel Ward.
Chubb will take this all the way. 92 yards.
Ready, Browns fans. Now, Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, everybody. This is Dan Kadar here. I'm joined right now by Nate Ulrich. Nate, how's it going, buddy?
Good, Dan. How are you?
Very good. Everybody who's just checking in, we have that fresh new intro sound finally on the podcast after several years of doing that. So thanks to Adam Fish of Gatehouse for doing that for us, but that's a new addition here on the podcast. We're making steps, baby. We're going to talk about today, though, the Cleveland Browns, of course. John Dorsey, the general manager of the Browns, had his pre-draft press conference today, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And we're going to talk about the NFL schedule release. It's a huge deal now for the NFL, and it's a particularly huge deal for the Cleveland Browns, who are in a ton of primetime games and a ton of interesting games and a couple nice twists and turns for the Browns on the schedule this year. So we'll talk about that on the second part of the show. But, Nate, let's start with John Dorsey. He talked today for 25 minutes or so. What was your biggest takeaway from what he had to say today?
Well, we know how aggressive he is, and that's why whenever anybody asks me about him possibly trading back into the first round, I say he can't rule it out. I mean, he couldn't rule out him trading for Odell Beckham Jr., even though it seemed unlikely for a long time, considering the financial implications for the New York Giants, the fact that they had just signed him to a huge contract extension in August. But lo and behold, it happened. And I just think that with John Dorsey and his aggressive nature, he's made 17 trades since the Browns hired him on December 7th, 2017. With that kind of activity, you just kind of expect him to trade to wheel and deal at some point. And it certainly could be from number 49 to late in the first round if he really likes a player who's sliding down there. And, you know, you talk about different scenarios and trade partners, and the Oakland Raiders have three picks, in the first round, and I think the last of those three is 27 overall. And then the New England Patriots, who have a history of trading down, are sitting there at 32 as the defending Super Bowl champion. So those are a couple potential partners, and Dorsey left the door wide open, said that he's got to do his due diligence and talk to teams before the draft about potentially moving up into the back end of the first round, and that he'd be willing to pay the price that it would cost, from middle of the second round to end of the first round if the right player's there. So he did not rule it out. In fact, he talked a lot about possibly doing it and how he's weighing the scenarios, and he's going to spend 3 days early next week going through all of them and saying, hey, what if this player's there? What if that player's there? What would it cost? And kicking that around with his top lieutenants in the draft room so that when next Thursday, April 25th arrives, he's ready to pounce if somebody slides down that board in the first round and he wants to make an aggressive move.
Yeah, the one other team I would keep in mind for a potential trade partner is Seattle. Now, they're all the way at 21, but I think a trade with Seattle might be kind of cheap this year because I think they only have four draft picks, and I think they kind of intimated at the combine, John Snyder, their GM. He's open to trading down. He trades a lot, so I think that's a spot, too. And the player that has been really connected, Nate, to the Browns by you and some other folks is Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State. We've kind of explained on prior podcasts why he is the player to connect to the Browns for various reasons, so we don't have to go through all that fully, but do you think he is the guy that Dorsey would have in mind for a move?
He's the obvious name, for sure.
Yeah.
And Dorsey today called him a phenomenal football player. You know, he was in 2 weeks ago for a pre-draft visit. We knew that. Dan, you kind of teased that at the end of one of our podcasts, and I wrote about it. Jeffrey Simmons revealed that on Instagram, which is what these prospects do. This has been, like, the new thing this year. And maybe it happened before this year, but to me it's really hit this year that I've really noticed it. Almost all of them are putting little videos up on Instagram of where they're at on pre-draft visits and stuff like that, which the teams traditionally have liked to keep secret. So it's kind of interesting that the players are kind of taking that into their own hands and say, hey, world, here's where I'm at. And Simmons did that a couple weeks ago in Berea. And Dorsey today talked about how he visited and they talked about his past transgression, obviously. We've talked about it many times, so I'm not going to go into great length, but when he was in high school, his sister was fighting a woman. And I talked to his high school coach this week at length about this incident. And actually, the high school coach, whose name is Tyrone Shorter, explained to me that the mother of Jeffrey Simmons was involved too. So that part wasn't, you know, seen on the video, but his mother and his sister were fighting, and Simmons stepped into the fight when the woman they were fighting was on the ground, and he struck her several times. He was a senior in high school. This was 3 years ago. Obviously, the Browns have signed Kareem Hunt, despite him being caught on video shoving and kicking a woman last year in downtown Cleveland. But this is a major red flag, to say the least. Yet, Jeffrey Simmons is considered a top five talent, and we know that talent reigns supreme over all else in John Dorsey's world of evaluating players. On top of all this, Jeffrey Simmons suffered a torn ACL in his left knee in February while training for his draft preparations. And all of this is almost what could be a perfect storm for him to slide enough for John Dorsey to have a chance to trade up and get him. I don't think he's going to last until number 49, even though Dorsey spoke as if he might. Any draft analyst out there, you know, who I've read or talked to or been on a conference call this year, including you, Dan, I don't think really thinks that it's realistic for Jeffrey Simmons to last until 49.
No, it's not. I just wonder if, you know, the contingency plans that are being set up for the Browns that they're going to go over here in the next few days. And I wonder if it's this. Explore a trade-up for Simmons, stay at 49 and take Draymond Jones of Ohio State. You know, same position, somewhat similar style. Jones is a lot smaller. And if all else fails in the third round, if you don't get either of those two, you can take Tristan Hill of UCF, who the Browns brought in for a top 30 visit. I wonder if that's a scenario, because I pulled together what I know is who they've brought in for their top 30 visits, and some people have, you know, tabbed the Browns for a cornerback at 49, and all the cornerbacks that they're bringing in are day three guys. So I wonder if that's going to be the plan. See if you can go get Simmons. If not, wait for Jones at 49, and if that doesn't work, maybe this Tristan Hill from Central Florida. Of course, that could all mean nothing, and these visits are purely smokescreen, but in my brain right now, that's kind of the what I think their plan might be.
Yeah, we're on the same page. The main story that I wrote off this pre-draft news conference today essentially says what you just went over. That's, hey, if Simmons isn't in the cards, the Browns could still get a big-name defensive tackle at 49, you know, theoretically, if Draymond Jones is there. a lot of analysts project him to go middle of the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? He was in last week at the Browns' local pro day. Not only is he eligible for that because he's played for Ohio State, but he's from Cleveland. He went to St. Ignatius. The Browns didn't have to spend a 30 visit on him. They were able to get him in the facility and work him out as part of that local pro day that they had. They did the same thing last year with Denzel Ward, wound up picking him fourth overall. So they have had the three defensive tackles you mentioned in the building, Jeffrey Simmons, Draymond Jones, Tristan Hill, and I am very intrigued by all three of them. And the reason why is because I think that they're, in some cases, would not be there at 49 in a typical year, but I think the defensive line class is so strong this year, and it has good depth, and you're going to be able to get some really good players at those positions middle of second round where the Browns are sitting. Now, obviously, they're extenuating circumstances why Simmons could fall, which we've gone over today and many other times. But I think the depth of the class is a factor in all this, too. And when I asked Dorsey what he thought of Jones and if there's anything he could tell us about how his time in Berea went, he gushed over him. I mean, I'm almost a little suspicious about how much praise he gave him, because it's almost like he doesn't think that he might not be there or something like that. He said that the D-line coaches put him through 15 or 20-minute drills, and he thought he did outstanding. And when you look at the combination of his ability to play the game and his character, the type of person he is, you would certainly love to have a guy like that on your team. So he was really expansive in his answer there and talked at great length about Simmons as well. Those two guys and the trade-up stuff, I thought, was the most interesting stuff when he kind of put it all together and think about the possibilities.
Yeah. Excuse me, I'm working through a cold, everybody, so apologies for my sniffling and whatnot. But to finish that kind of little storyline, to tell everybody about Tristan Hill a little bit, because he does seem kind of obscure. He only started one game last season in Central Florida because they got a new coaching staff there, and quite frankly, he just didn't get along with them, and they kind of played him as a backup. But in 2017, he was really good, kind of playing a nose tackle kind of thing, but he's really athletic. So who does that sound like to me? Kind of Larry Ogunjobi-ish. So he's an interesting player. Everybody should go check out him. Watch him on YouTube. There's some cool highlights out there of him. He's an extremely athletic defensive tackle. Nate, the other... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so just to piggyback on that, he was in for the 30 visit, and I was told that he just had that, like you said, he had a falling out with the coaching staff. But I was listening to Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. They do a podcast, Move the Sticks, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of talking about the teams without first-round picks, what they thought those teams would do. So they had a spotlight on the Browns at 49, and Jeremiah went straight to Tristan Hill for the Browns.
Wow.
And saying how he was UCF's best player, even though he was not a starter last season. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I think, you know, Jeremiah is really good and, you know, had a lot of interesting things to say about him and how he thinks he's a tremendous talent that kind of it made my ears perk up. And, you know, when I got the information confirmed that he had been in on a 30 visit, I put him right there in the mix as one of the most intriguing guys.
Yeah, and he is, excuse me, he's real interesting, and Daniel Jeremiah, I can tell you, is not alone in his high praise of Tristan Hill. There's a lot of people who like him. We'll see. It's, you know, a week away now for the 2019 NFL Draft. The other interesting thing from Dorsey's press conference today was the Duke Johnson comments. You know, of course, he kind of said what, you know, probably most people expected. But do you think anything has changed with Duke Johnson's status on the Cleveland Browns going forward?
Not really. I think it's just that Dorsey's message is that he's not in any rush to grant this trade request. you know, Dorsey's message is he still views him as a part of the organization moving forward. But we know that can change. Obviously, if we're talking about a trade-up scenario, and we've talked about this before, Dan, but I'll reiterate real quickly, Duke Johnson could be part of that. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Duke Johnson is moved on draft weekend and if the Browns draft a running back to kind of hold down the fort at backup to Nick Chubb while Kareem Hunt serves his 8-game suspension. By the way, we'll get to more of the schedule later, but part of the schedule is that Kareem Hunt's first game back would be November 10th at home against Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I kind of look at it. The only real update I thought was that, Dorsey said that he had talked to Duke Johnson's agent, and that had not been the case previously. Duke Johnson's agent had actually requested the trade by talking to somebody else in the organization, and the line of communication between Duke Johnson's camp and Dorsey had not opened. It was through another member of the front office that the trade had been asked for. So Dorsey said he had talked to the agent on the phone and that Freddie Kitchens had been texting with Duke Johnson. He said that none of the parties involved had discussed whether Duke Johnson's going to show up to the mandatory minicamp June 4th through 6th, which would be kind of the big date to watch for all this if he's still on the team after the draft.
Look, if you want to go deep conspiracy theory here with Duke Johnson and the thought of involving him in a trade up, what do the Oakland Raiders need pretty badly in this draft? Or a running back. People think they might take Josh Jacobs of Alabama with one of their second picks in the 20s, but they need running backs. And here's a thing from John Gruden from 2015 before the draft of Duke Johnson. He said, if you don't like Duke Johnson, you have to tell me why. So maybe John Gruden likes Duke Johnson, and that maybe, look, if you want to go full conspiracy theory and you know, ponder some trade ups and sound smart when you do it, listeners, that connect that one.
Let's do it. And you know what? I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat. This is an amazing podcast right now, Dan, because you're making great points, and then I can just chime in at the end with my two cents and kind of add a little cherry on top. And I'm going to go Kirby Wilson, Raiders' new running backs coach, former Browns running backs coach, who loves Duke Johnson. So there's another connection.
We're just connecting dots over here. That's why the NFL's fun. Nate, anything else from Dorsey's press conference today you want to cover before we move on to the schedule stuff?
No, I mean, those are definitely the main points. Plenty of little nuggets here and there, things that were said, but most of it, has kind of been covered throughout the offseason, whether it's the combine or the owners' meeting. So I guess let's talk a little schedule.
Yeah, the schedule's pretty favorable to the Cleveland Browns, I would say. They got five of their last seven games, or five of their last eight games at home, rather. They got five of their six divisional games after they get Kareem Hunt back. Like you mentioned, his first game is going to be against the Buffalo Bills in Cleveland. They've got, four primetime games here, two Monday night, a Sunday night, and a Thursday night. They got a bye before they had to play New England. Looking over this thing, Nate, it looks like the Browns were given as nice of a schedule as I can recall. This is a phenomenal schedule as far as schedules go.
Yeah, they could have really used this in previous years when they were no good. You know, give them a little bit of a break. But now, obviously, it's much more beneficial because they're hoping to win the division, and they've got a favorable schedule. They do. I mean, I think that, you know, you could say it's a little tough early on because there's something that comes with the primetime games and the pressure and all that and the stage, and some of the teams certainly too. You know, three of the first five games are prime time. After the opener, three of the next four are prime time. The opener is 1 p.m. against Tennessee. Right there, that's favorable. I mean, I think that that's a game that the Browns should win. They open, obviously, very early, but they open as 4.5-point favorites last night. And we know how the Browns are 1-18-1 in week one since 1999 and haven't won an opener since 2004. Of course, last year they ended the losing streak by tying the Steelers, but they still have a winless streak intact in the opener. So I think that's huge. Obviously, you got to win that against Tennessee. And then week two, Monday night, Jets, I mean, they beat the team last year. Teams are different, but the Browns certainly have upgraded. I know the Jets have Le'Veon Bell and C.J. Mosley now. But I think that's another game I look at if I'm playing the way too premature schedule game and saying the Browns ought to be 2-0, and then you got the Rams, and that's a huge opportunity for the city of Cleveland, the fans, the organization, to have the premier game, Sunday Night Football, in Cleveland against the defending NFC champion. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, but there are a lot of favorable things once you get past, you know, the early stretch especially. You mentioned the week before New England. I think that's huge that they get the bye at that time. I also think it's huge that they're getting Seattle at 1 p.m. Eastern time in Cleveland. Anytime a West Coast team plays 1 p.m. Eastern, that's an advantage, you know, for the home team. So in that case, I think that you give them a little bit of an advantage just based on the time against the Seahawks. You get a little bit of an advantage based on the bye that you wouldn't have had otherwise against the Super Bowl, Super Dynasty Patriots. You know, if you look at the Bengals as the weakest link in the AFC North like I do, I think they play them twice in the final month of the season.
Yep.
I just think that there are a lot of you know, breaks built in here. You know, the end of the season is going to be fascinating because I think five of the final seven and three of the last four are in the AFC North, and of course the Steelers twice in 3 weeks. That's huge. So overall, I think that you know, there's not one kind of glaring part of the schedule where you go, oh, the Browns really got a tough break here. I think it's kind of the other way around. And you know, I was looking at, there's a couple things, Dan. You know, when you look at strength of schedule from last year, the Browns had the sixth easiest schedule in the NFL, but that's last year's records, as we know. It's not a great way to judge it, you know, because teams change so much. The Browns hope to be a prime example of that this year with the moves that they've made. So I was looking at the Vegas over-under win totals for every team.
Mm.
And I think out of the Browns, the opponents that the Browns have, only three have higher over-under totals given to them by odds makers. The Patriots do for sure, the Rams, and I think there's a third, but I wrote it all about it yesterday for my schedule story, but off the top of my head now I'm missing it. The Seahawks are actually 8.5. The Browns are 9, by the way. I should start there. The Browns are 9. And I know the Patriots and the Rams have more. I thought a third team, but it's either two or three teams. So, the Steelers are 8.5. So the bottom line is, I think this lines up pretty well for the Browns.
It really does, and I don't remember seeing a schedule quite like this where the Browns have just as many games at 1 o'clock as games not at 1 o'clock. Like, it seemed year after year after year, it was, you know, 12 games at 1 o'clock per season minimum. So now, you know, the this New England game, the Denver game the next week, those are at 4:25. Those are essentially primetime games for the Browns, even though they're at 4:25. Those get almost as much viewership as the big Sunday night games of the week. Though that's interesting to me. The NFL kind of hedging their bets on the Browns a little bit is interesting to me. Like you mentioned, they got three out of the first five in prime time at 8:15, 8:20. So if the Browns kind of stink, which hopefully they don't, the NFL doesn't have to worry about it because they got the buzz out of them at the beginning of the year, and then they can die off. But if the Browns are real good back half of the year, they can get flexed out, you know, like this Bengals game or the Baltimore game, if that has huge implications on December 22nd. I could see that game getting flexed up from 1 o'clock. That stuff's interesting to me. I know people are pointing to all the games you mentioned with just reason. The most interesting game on the schedule for me, and this is really weird and offbeat, it's at San Francisco on Monday Night Football. Don't forget, like, going into last season, the 49ers were supposed to be the team that the people are talking about the Browns now as. You know, people thought, you know, Garoppolo's going to be this superstar. Here comes the 49ers. Yada, yada, yada. Kyle Shanahan is a genius. Then Garoppolo got hurt, and they just didn't have enough bodies there, quite frankly. But that game, I don't know. I think the Browns kind of start out pretty well. The Rams game will be tough, but I think that game in San Francisco, it's going to be pretty pivotal. That's the one that really fascinates me out of the whole schedule.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a that's the big buzzworthy team last year.
Yeah.
And the Browns are that this year, so that is a fascinating matchup from that standpoint. The Vegas. Real quick, just to get this right, the Vegas over-under totals out of the compared with the Browns' opponents to the Browns. The Browns are at 9, and the Patriots are at 11, and the Rams are at 10.5. So those are the only two teams with greater over-under win totals. So, I mean, we kind of knew that those are the opponents, but, you know, those two, we knew those were the opponents for a long time, and now we know the order and the times and everything. But those two are obviously the Super Bowl participants from last year, and again, that if, I think that the Patriots, are the Patriots even on a short week? The Patriots might even be on a short
yes,
week.
Yes, they play Monday night in New York against the Jets.
Okay, so that's another break, right? So not only are the Browns coming off a bye, but the Patriots are on a short week. So I just, you know.
Yeah.
It's never easy against the Patriots, but if you want, you take every little advantage you can get, and there are a couple right there.
There's so many more things you can pick out of the schedule. It's insane how, like, interesting an NFL schedule is. Like the Dolphins. People think the Dolphins are going to go 2017 Browns this year and tank. You know, so that could be possible for the Browns in November.
Now, aren't the Dolphins part of that three-game stretch in November?
Of home games?
In which the Browns are at home? That's yes. Another thing. Yeah, three consecutive home games.
Yeah, you know, there's that. There's, you know, at Arizona toward the end of the year. Who the hell knows what Arizona's going to be this year? They were terrible last year, though. There's a ton of fascinating stuff, and of course, with the schedule release came record predictions. I have a couple of them here, Nate. You don't have to give me yours now if you don't want to, but I thought these were interesting. Bleacher Report, I don't know who wrote it, I didn't look. They gave him the Browns 10-6. Lewis Riddick, who is a former Browns player and now he's a phenomenal ESPN analyst. But he's very straightforward and tough, and, you know, he doesn't BS people, basically. He predicted the Browns to go 11-5, which is pretty strong. He had them Splitting the games with Baltimore and Pittsburgh. He had them losing to Seattle and New England. I can't remember what the other loss is, but he has the Browns going 11-5. And Mike Clay of ESPN, who runs his predictions based on numbers and data and all this other kind of nerdy stuff, and it's very interesting, he predicted the Browns to go 13-3, or have the advantage to win 13 games, I should say, is how he does it. So the record predictions are coming pretty strong, and you mentioned the over-under in Vegas is below all of those predictions, so it's interesting. Nate, do you have a way too early before the NFL draft record prediction? Do you want to hold off?
Well, my initial gut reaction is 10, but I will reserve the right to amend it as we go through training camp and preseason. Because, I mean, this is the thing. It's football, right? And anything can happen with injuries, and you hope and pray that that doesn't happen, you know, in training camp, in preseason, because that can alter everything. We talk about the 49ers and Garoppolo going down, you know. So you just want to get through all that healthy, and I think if the Browns do that, I'm going to feel pretty strongly about double-digit wins.
Same here, and it's looking like a fun season. Ton of storylines already built into it. We just spent 15 minutes talking about the damn schedule. That's how interesting the Browns are right now.
Right, so. And it's like, damn, that like the draft for so long had been the Browns Super Bowl, and now it's like an afterthought for many fans, and the fans partied. Like, you know, the schedule release was like the first round of the draft of years past. Like, it was just surreal to see how much excitement the schedule release generated locally here in Northeast Ohio. I mean, NFL Network had a live shot with David Njoku at the Barley House in Cleveland. Our George Thomas went down there and talked to fans and talked to Njoku. I mean, it was a huge event.
Yeah.
It's unreal. How much buzz is around this team, and you know, just the momentum that it's created for itself here, and that the draft, it's no longer the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is now the Super Bowl, and Browns fans have their eye on it.
Yeah, and look, not to, you know, toot your horn here, but you had the perfect lead for your schedule story today. The Browns have officially made a quantum leap from unwatchable to must-see TV. That's so true. And, of course, that story's up at ohio.com/Browns. Nate, we got anything else this week before we get out of here?
I think that's it. I haven't had a chance to duplicate my feat of Swenson's and In-N-Out. So I don't have anything cool like that, but I'm still riding high from that, and I will continue to brag about it while I can.
Well, I was actually thinking about that the other day. We might have to do Shake Shack. Have you gone to Shake Shack yet?
I have not, but I heard one's coming. Is one coming to...
There's one in Orange.
Okay, I think one's coming somewhere else. Maybe even... Could it be the airport? I don't know. Maybe. I thought I heard something about one coming to Cleveland.
Maybe, but Shake Shack could be a play here.
Oh, we got another one, Dan.
Mm.
This was big news this week in the I don't know, it's not Cleveland, but, you know, other parts of Northeast Ohio that I frequent. Bamba coming to Kent.
Yes.
Huge news.
Barrio.
Oh, I'm sorry, Barrio.
Yes.
Yeah, I botched that. I'm sorry. I have a Bamba here not far from where I live, and Bamba's, you know, another taco joint, good place. But Barrio, even more coveted, coming to Kent, Water Street.
Yeah, and that is about 10 minutes from where I live, so RIP me. Because I will be there. That's your Cleveland, Northeast Ohio food update from us here on the Cover 2 podcast. But that's going to do it for the show. Like I mentioned, all our stuff is over at ohio.com/Browns. Nate mentioned George Thomas's really fun story on the fans, Nate's stuff on the schedules up there. There's a ton of draft preview stuff from Nate and Steve Dorshuk, which you can check out. And there's a whole lot more. Again, ohio.com/Browns. Make sure you're following Nate on Twitter. He's at @ByNateUlrich. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk to you next time.